To
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to The Business Bunker Show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm going to ask my guests if they'll throw me over a tea bag, my lovely Lisa.
A dry one or a wet one?
No, a dry one, an unused one if there are any. Because I brought my whole, thank you, Tim, I brought my whole bag and there's no tea bags in there. Somebody snaffled them.
Is that right?
I wanted to say about the workplace, following on from what patients were saying, which was fascinating.
Mm.
We could have a whole show just with patients,
mm-hmm.
and then another whole show just with vets.
That's
what I'd like.
Yeah.
But when I was driving in this morning, I don't know whether anybody heard on the news, there's this law firm, and they're saying that they are happy for everybody to work from home, as they have been. And they've employed a load of people all around the world that are all working from home on a lower base.
Yeah.
But they want them to take a 20% pay cut because they're not commuting.
Yeah.
And there was outrage, understandably, because you've still got to pay for your Wi-Fi, your heating and all that sort of stuff.
Expenses, love.
And expenses, yeah.
No, they are expenses. Mm. You can expense them.
Well, if you're employed, can you, though?
Yeah, of course.
To your employer, then?
Yeah, of course.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, anyway, there was outrage.
Yeah, no, I'm sure there were, you know, because it's a Hertzberg hygiene thing. If you try and take money away from people, you demotivate them. If you give them more, but if you take it away, they don't like it.
And also, the companies are saving money by downsizing their offices if people aren't going.
Yeah. I mean, it's a moot point, isn't it? Yes, you're saving money. Yes, the company has to pay more in technology terms, but no, they save money on rent and business rates. You know, it's swings and roundabouts kind of job. I mean, I think it's a bit, my personal view, it's a bit churlish to
I think so.
Remove people's money because of some savings they're making. The only caveat to that is I would take away from civil servants and other people London waiting. If you're not working in London, why do you get London waiting? You know,
exactly.
But aside from that, but funny enough, years ago, well in front of the curve, I know a law firm based in Maidstone who have a very senior legal partner who lives in the north of Norway. She is English but lives in Norway with her Norwegian husband. And the chap that kind of is the principal owner of the firm told me once he'd never met her.
Really?
He'd never met her personally, face to face. He'd hired her. She'd been there 6 or 7 years. He'd hired her. They talk regularly every week, but they've never physically met each other.
That's the height of trust.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, it was funny when you were saying patients about work environments, and since I've been sharing my office with my new husband, who's ex-Bloomberg, you know, he works hard, but he's moved everything in my office. He's taken my whiteboard down, which I love. I love a whiteboard. And I like classical music. He turns it off when he comes in. So our desks are next to each other now. I have the window open. He shuts it.
You know, you were talking about relationships at work.
Yeah. It's really stressful. And I now have to ask permission to get in my own office to do a podcast because he's always in there commandeering it.
I'll say that's always a growth opportunity for you.
Is it? What, to build another office?
Well, maybe, but also a personal growth opportunity.
But I think you should come round.
But there's a serious point there. There is a really serious point there. Is that every opportunity has a downside and an upside, yeah? And just thinking, you know, oh, I'll tell you what, we'll send everybody to work at home, it's no more a solution than anything else, because it depends, you know, it depends on where you live, what facilities you've got, who else is sharing the house.
Yeah.
We've actually got a couple of blogs on people that were forced to work at home during the pandemic but live in shared houses,
mm-hmm.
yeah? How do you do that? How do you all work on the same kitchen table? They all work for different people, yeah? Mm. So they're sharing a house, but all trying to work on a kitchen table. They had to work out rosters of who could work when.
Crazy. I mean,
actually, there's the other element of you actually don't switch off if you're working from home.
Yeah.
If you could leave work at work and come home and balance it out, you probably can have the challenge of never been out of work.
Yeah.
So it's how you balance that as well. And that might be one of the challenges in the long run, is if there are no boundaries, people never get to switch off from work. Mm. That can become another mental health issue.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Lots of tweets, Paul Andrews.
I was going to say, we need to catch up with some tweets because we want to talk to Tim and Lisa very, very soon. But we need to kind of catch up, otherwise we're going to be behind.
We have some smashing comments on Patience's interview. And Hey Dip Your Toes In. Now, I met Hey Dip Your Toes In. If they're listening, we met on a cruise ship. I was invited to a press conference on this cruise ship on the River Thames. And we met and we sat on the same table many years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years. So that's Team Yolanda and Omo. They're published food and travel writers and photographers. They are Amazon Prime presenters, digital content creators, TEDx, all sorts of motivational speakers. You can find them on Dip Your Toes In. It does what it says on the tin. HeyDipYourToesIn.com. And yeah, many, many moons ago. Hope you're well, guys. But they loved Patience's interesting insights today.
Fantastic. I've had a tweet from Stephen at CBS for Kent. He says, hello, Vanilla Web. I know it's been a long time. Please give me a mention on the Business Bunker Show. I'm now back providing business services to UK industrial and commercial businesses at competitive rates. You can follow him on Twitter, CBS4Kent, CBS for Kent.
And Tented and Chambers have said, hi, Jules Serkin and your little helper. How about a shout out for a busy chamber, Chamber of Commerce team? We're preparing for a networking meeting this evening. That is Tented and Hub on the Twitter. And they've got an EC30_Tented and there as well. So thank you for that. And hope you have a good networking meeting tonight.
Absolutely. I'm going tonight.
Oh, are you?
Yeah. DG East, hi Vanilla Web, how about a shout out for a busy sponsor working through more documents from the grossly inefficient Financial Conduct Authority just to pay an even larger set of fees. He's not happy about it, Terry. He is not happy about it. And I've got to say, I don't blame him. I mean, why a government agency have suddenly increased their prices by 380% when they actually aren't doing any more than they were doing last month is beyond me. I just think it's outrageous.
Paragon Drones have said Jules Serkin, cheesy tunage, beaten by Bross.
Yeah.
I think I was busy when Bross were out, but I don't think I've ever heard that song.
No, I don't think anyone has.
did they sing When Will I Be Famous?
Yeah.
So I knew. I saw them once going down the King's Road, actually. And Casey Canine, the lovely greyhound, who is on the Twitter, Casey Canine 2014, in other words, says, how about a shout out for a love struck greyhound desperate to meet the apple of his eye, the lovely Darcy?
Absolutely.
So big shout out to Casey Canine.
Absolutely.
He seems to spend a lot of time eating out, that dog.
He does.
He's always in a pub or a restaurant.
Yeah, don't blame him. he's big into ice cream as well, I think.
Yes, but it's greyhound ice cream, I think.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I don't know what flavour that is.
No.
Is it quick? Is it hair flavoured?
Do you know, that whole thing about greyhounds, they are either fast or they're asleep. Yeah. Sighthounds.
Or both at the same time.
Yeah. I guess. Who else? So, my timeline's full, but there's a lot of vaccine damage. I don't think you want to hear that.
I don't want to hear that.
Did I read out Lisa Settle? I did, didn't I?
You did.
I trust assurance.
I'll tell you what, while you're catching up, I'm going to start speaking to Tim.
Oh, I'd love to know about what they do.
Yeah, because we've got them here and now we want to talk to them.
My big regret. Do you know what my big regret is?
Which one?
One of them is that I didn't marry.
Is it one of your husbands?
Well, yes, exactly. You got it in one. I married a journalist. I didn't marry a vet or a builder. All you really need in your life is a vet or a builder.
There's time. You've been through enough husbands already. I'm sure you could fit in a few more in the last few years of your remaining life.
I know. Journalism, great, interesting at the time. But
see, because in your early days, you went by religions, didn't you?
I did, yes. Yeah. I was a Muslim. Now my new husband's Jewish. So, and I've had a Christian as well.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
She's on the hunt for a Buddhist, but...
Well, they're always calm.
She's got to complete the set.
Got to be a Buddhist vet or a Buddhist builder.
And now you want a Buddhist... Now, see, you're getting...
I'm having a garage demolished next Monday.
What's that got to do with the price of bread?
Builders.
Ah.
Yeah, it's costing me a fortune.
Yeah, watch it, lads.
If you had a builder,
if any of you are ex-vets or Buddhists doing her building, stay well away from her wardrobe. That's all I can advise. Now, listen, enough of that nonsense. I wanted to talk to Tim and Lisa. Guys, thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunker Show.
Afternoon.
Thank you for having us.
You must be.
We've got them both on Twitter,
you must
Paul
be
Andrews.
In deep shock after all this nonsense.
Well, they've listened to Patience, so they know that there is some calm in the show.
Well, there is about to be, because we're going to talk to two very sensible people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tim, Lisa, thank you for joining us. You're from Bobbing Hill Veterinary Surgery,
which is near Sittingbourne.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's get some parameters set first of all. Tim, you're a vet?
I am, yes. I'm a vet, and with my wife Laura, who's not here,
You've left her working, haven't you?
Unfortunately, I have, yeah. She got the short straw. Well, I don't know if she did or I did.
No, I think you did, mate.
But yes, we're both vets, and we own Bobbing Hill Vets, and we've been open now for around about 6 weeks. This is our sixth week.
Yeah,
so quite new.
Very new.
Where did you come from?
So we are both from Kent, and we both worked in local vets around Kent, having been graduated for
7 years, is it?
I'm about 7 years, nearly eight now.
Was it Cambridge?
No, Edinburgh.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the pair of us actually, both from Kent, and I went all the way to Edinburgh to find myself a girl from Kent.
It's a lovely city though.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, I graduated in 2013 and Laura the year after.
And it's a long degree program as well, isn't it?
5 years.
Yeah.
Both of us actually did degrees beforehand. I was at Nottingham.
What was your degree in beforehand?
I did animal science with nutrition, mm-hmm. With sort of more of an agricultural focus, and then went up immediately after Nottingham up to Edinburgh for 5 years.
I'm fascinated by this. Was that a plan? So you thought, I'd do this degree and then I'll do another one?
Kind of. It wasn't. I certainly don't regret the way in which I went about it. I enjoyed both, all 8 years at university. Would definitely recommend it. Certainly not the bills that come out of it afterwards. But I just really enjoyed both Edinburgh and Nottingham. But
when you went to Nottingham,
yes.
Did you have a plan in your mind to eventually become a vet? Or is it something you got inspired by when you were studying at Nottingham?
No, I think, like most...
Were you just trying to get Laura on a date?
I think it's... I always had it in my mind, but it wasn't completely the forefront of it. I think I knew there was another way around it to get up to Edinburgh. It is a plausible way, but I didn't go straight into veterinary medicine for a number of different reasons. But 8 years at university as a perpetual student isn't the end of the world.
Yeah, and the food in Scotland is superb, isn't it?
Does that mean you've got two student loans as well?
Yes.
Blimey.
But he's a vet, it's fine.
He's minted. Yeah, he's minted now.
Very... huge misconception there, I can assure you that. The pair of us, Laura and I, got married in 2015, and we've worked for various different practices around the area, and then we started thinking about opening up our own practice late sort of last year.
Okay. I want to talk to you about that in a moment, Tim. Mm-hmm. We've got a lot to talk about and not a lot of time to talk about it. Yeah. I want Lisa to introduce herself as well. Yeah. But our listeners are fascinated by two things in the guests that we talk to here. What they do, i.e. veterinary surgery, but they're also interested in what inspired you to start your own business, how you started it, what the drawbacks were, because everybody likes to hear it. You know, they don't like to think they were the only people that suffered when they started
the
business.
I would think the investment in being a vet
is huge.
All the equipment and the
we'll talk about that in a moment. Let's introduce Lisa. So Lisa Field, you're also Bobbing Hill Vets.
Yep.
Now, are you a vet? I think you're a animal.
I'm a nurse.
veterinary nurse. They do all the work.
You do all the work.
The vet swans off.
We'd be lost without them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm a vet nurse. So I qualified in 2003.
Right.
So it's been quite a long time now. 19 years since I qualified, I think. And I was working in practice a few years before that as well.
Okay. And veterinary nursing, is that like human nursing? You have to do a degree in it? Or
no, you have to go to college, not a degree.
Which is as it should be.
They've changed it now. When I did it, it was 2 years at college whilst you're working. But I think it's 4 years now at college. They've made it a bit more difficult. So you go to college once a week and you work in a practice, and then you have lots of exams to go through. So, absolutely. It takes
I'm amazed at how much nurses do now, veterinary nurses. They do an awful lot.
You have to learn an awful lot that, to be honest, a lot of it you don't need to use every day, but you have to learn a lot of theory. Okay. And they've made it even worse now. I think they've got to sort of have 4 years of training, and they've got to learn all the how the x-ray machine works and all things like that.
Mm. Now, I've got a big question here. For vets, unlike human medicine, where you kind of deal with the same thing, you've got a whole series of different species.
Now, elephants,
exactly, and crocodiles and all kinds.
There aren't many of them.
We've got Port Lim, haven't we?
Yeah, but I just want to set some ground rules here, because there are vets that specialise in different things. You know, there are agricultural vets that go out and stick their hands up cows' bums and stuff like that, and there are vets that deal with exotic animals and all kinds of things. They tend to specialise, so you guys, are you predominantly pet based or?
We are. So we're predominantly companion species, so small animal. We will do occasional sort of exotics. It's not our MO, so to speak, but
from hamsters upwards.
Historically I've been a mixed animal vet. I've done equine, livestock, everything in between, but the team now and the practice is small animal focused.
We are
providing generally sort of a first opinion, general practice, be that sort of elective things like neutering, dentistry, to emergency critical care.
This is what's fascinating is the range of things you do, unlike a human GP
who don't
do very much at all at the moment.
But they're doctors. They're not GPs. They're doctors.
Sorry?
He's a consultant. You're much more than a GP. GPs don't do surgery.
I don't envy GPs. I would say that.
And they don't do dentistry either and stuff like that. And that's what fascinates me about veterinary medicine. Is the even I don't want to use the word in a derogatory way, but even in a limited fashion, only dealing with small animals, there's a pretty big range of small animals to deal with.
Absolutely.
Are there vast differences in how you treat different types of animals?
Yeah, absolutely. There's huge differences, species variation, and be it surgically, how you you have to operate on certain individuals, to what type of drugs you can use in one species over
another. And the amount. A hamster as opposed to an elephant.
So there's a lot to bear in mind, but that's part of the attraction to it. That's the interesting nature of it, really.
Now, you can tell me, because there's no one listening. Do you have to Google it quite often?
No,
we try and steer people away from Dr. Google.
But you're not just dealing with dogs and cats, you're dealing with their owners. And I sometimes, when I go to my vets, the lady that does that, my doggy home care, home stay, she calls it, she's when our dog was put to sleep, she was worse than me. So she was phoning me up going, oh, Jules, I can't believe Cassie's. And she was like taking my grief that I wanted. Hers was tripled, so what I call absolutely batty about dogs, crazy about dogs, much as I love them. So you're dealing not only with the little patient that you've got, but also the owners and the whole emotional thing when they're having to say goodbye to their pets, or their pets are going in to be on a drip or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's as much as dealing with the owner as it is the patient. In fact, it's probably more so. Yeah. You've got to be able to communicate everything to that owner, because they're the ones that have to make that informed decision.
And they're not pets, they're family members. Even more so now, I think, certainly with lockdown as well, people have spent so much more time with their animals, and they really are just family members, and we have to you know, be aware of that all the time. And that's how we feel about our pets as well. So,
yeah. So talking of lockdown, have you seen lots of behavioural problems as people go back to work and they've had these labradoodles and puppies and and the dogs are not used to being left and the cats?
Yes.
That's definitely a huge thing that's certainly going to be on the horizon as more and more people go potentially back to the offices or anything like that, that these dogs have huge separation anxiety. But Lisa's probably better versed in that, being a behaviourist.
Yeah, I'm a behaviourist as well, and that's all I'm seeing is separation anxiety all the time. Because bless them, they don't know what's happened.
No.
All of a sudden everyone's disappeared again.
What we're doing is, even though we're at home, we're still putting her away for an hour, half an hour, and pretending we're out. Sometimes we sit in the car in the drive and carry on working, but we're still trying to do that because it is. Dogs are difficult. And cats, are you seeing that with cats?
No, I mean, I don't do cat behaviour, but not really, because they don't care as much.
Cats on the whole tend to be much more self-sufficient anyway, don't they?
Yeah, they just get on with it.
You don't own a cat. A cat owns you.
Yeah, definitely more with dogs and cats.
Yeah. I used to have a pair of kittens many years ago where I lived. I had a big house, and we had bats in the loft, and of course bats are a protected species, so we had the bat protection league come along, because I had a young baby at the time, and I go, I don't want them living in my loft. There was hundreds of them, so they came along to look at removing them, and while we're sat in the kitchen discussing it, both of my kittens ploughed through the cat flap, and each of them had a bat in their mouth. and the guy from the bat protection league went absolutely crazy. You need to get bells on them. I don't think that will work, dear. To be honest.
We have a neighbour's tabby. I love tabbies, but she's about 10 doors down, but we're on her kitchen's top floor, and the cat sits on the roof trying to come in summer when my window's open. It just comes in the kitchen. Now, we've now got a greyhound. It's not a good idea.
No.
So I'm talking to this cat with a little spray of water. It's not very nice, but I'm saying, no, you can't come in.
Yeah.
Now, we have a chap that's a good friend of ours, Adrian Kearney, who runs do you know Adrian?
Yes, very well.
Runs a pet taxi, ambulance type service with Samson the parrot and all of the things that he does. But it's interesting what you were saying, Tim, about, you know, you've done some equine stuff. My partner has two horses, and we've just had to have some major surgery on one of them, and what a performance that was, actually getting the horse to a horse hospital miles away. You know, we had to hire bloody vans and lorries and cranes and all kinds of things just to get the horse there and back.
Yeah, you can factor these things in, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. Which all adds to the cost as well.
Well, let's talk about insurance, because I found that with my previous dog, Rescue, by the time she was 12, the insurance wouldn't pay anything, and that's when she needed thyroid meds and all sorts of stuff. So with Darcy Greyhound, we haven't actually insured her yet, which is terrible, because we need to. She's already cost us loads of money. But because they tend to break legs, don't they, greyhounds and things, so they can do, and thin skin. But looking at all the various insurance things, there just seem to be such a rip-off. And then you've got the brigade that say, I just save the money, put it aside, and the brigade that insure. Any tips?
With insurance, make sure it covers per condition for life, because some of these insurance policies cover per condition for the first year. And then if you've got a diabetic issue or thyroid or a long-term problem, that's when you come into issues.
We've had exactly that with the horses. We had a lot of insurance cover, but we got to the point where the insurance company went, this is the last time you can use this. And we go, really, why? Well, you've now used up your allocation. What allocation was that then? Exactly. If you look in the small print on page 942,
and it's got to be a really big sort of amount of money per condition as well, as much as you can afford to cover per condition. And some of the insurance companies will ask you to pay a percentage of each condition, but a lot of them don't.
So an excess.
Something to, and everyone has, you always have to pay an excess per condition. But again, an excess per condition for the first year or for life. You know, it's all those things you need to look into.
Cool. I want to come back, if I may, Tim, as I mentioned earlier, if you don't mind, looking at the inspiration for starting your own practice. So you and Laura were working as vets in other people's practices. What was it? What was the inspiration that said, you know, we really want to start our own?
So I think I've only ever worked in independent practices, essentially, that for me was, you know, it's quite an attraction. You know, not that we're here corporate bashing at all.
No,
I think it's really important. I think it's just more of a personable approach. There's definitely more, patient-focused. And, you know, you're able to look after your staff and patients and clients effectively. So we, it's been something I'd always kind of considered and wanted to do, a bit of a pipe dream, so to speak. And typically the wife's standpoint was she could probably just about live with me, let alone work with me. But yeah, for various different reasons, life events and a change of a number of different things, but we just agreed to do it, and it's been quite a long drawn out process, and I think probably I've definitely got the easier option. Laura's done the, without shadow of a doubt, the main grunt work. She's much more business focused,
right.
But she's taken on the main role in terms of an admin sort of work.
I'm fascinated by this. If you don't want to answer my questions, just go move on or whatever. But when you decided to do this, as Jules intimated, I imagine it's quite an expensive thing to do, to open a medical practice of any kind. You know, I've got friends that are dentists that moan, you know, that opening a dental practice costs an absolute fortune to start with, because you need all the gear and the chairs and and the torture equipment and everything.
But you have to find the right premises, presumably.
Well, yes. That's what I was going to ask, if you don't mind. What made you choose Bobbing Hill?
If you've seen it, and it's very picturesque, it's aesthetically pleasing, it's a perfect sort of location, great, fantastic sort of, we're just off the M2, or the really close to the M20, and it's got fantastic parking, we've got great sort of facilities. Being able to start it from fresh as well has been great, because we can do it exactly as we want it to be. We've not gone for this sort of really clinical approach. We want it to be quite homely,
right,
and people to feel at home, really, and not necessarily feel as though they've come into sort of the lion's den, so to speak. And I think we've definitely noticed that with some of the patients, and just how more at ease that they are. And we've just sort of, the area is beautiful. So we've really enjoyed sort of starting it from fresh.
It makes sense. So you found somewhere that you think, this is nice. Yeah. This ticks the boxes.
Absolutely.
It's the right place in the right environment, and it's close to transport.
And there's so much space. Cool. So much space as well, right, inside and out. And obviously we completely changed the whole layout.
Absolutely.
So we've got separate theatres.
What was it before you acquired it?
It was predominantly offices, but we've got a large area, and we obviously had to do a lot of building work in there. And we had some fantastic builders that essentially saw our vision and went with it. And
they were really invested in it. Builders and vets.
Yeah.
What more could you want?
And as I said, we've been open 6 weeks now. We've had some fantastic feedback and wonderful comments, and fantastic clients that have come through the doors, some that have followed us from other practices as well, which is really lovely. It's a great accolade. Mm-hmm. One of the main advantages of us, really, certainly within the areas that we're doing, obviously not only that we're independent and family run, but we do our own out of hours, which most,
often
more and more increasingly,
a
lot of other practices will sort of send out any emergency out of hours work. This job for me, I never sort of went into it thinking it was a 9-to-5. It's not.
How does that work? Does somebody ring you out and go, my dog's chucking up, and you get in the car with a flashing light and you go over there?
Pretty much.
That would be easy. But you just ring us, and essentially we'll.
But you go to them. You don't go, I'll be at the clinic, come over.
Yeah, no. We generally, obviously everything is at the clinic, really. Yeah. We can do home visits, and we do, but generally, by and large, if the dog or cat needs to be seen, then bring it to us. Yeah. And, certainly within the area, very few other practices offer their own out of hours, and there are two larger corporately owned practices that do their emergency out of hours, and most of those will sort of go to those, but certainly within the area there's no one that does offer it, so and a lot of them obviously have to drive past us as well
and,
to
and
get
that was part of the vision, wasn't it, because we've worked in practices where you've had to then send the patient to an external out of hours clinic, and sometimes it's not appropriate for the patient. It's better to be able to have that continuity of care.
Yes.
As you say, you know, the vast majority of people, 99.9% of people, view their pets as family members. And of course if your pet's sick, it's worrying, but unlike an adult or a child or a human, you can't go, what's wrong? Or I've got a tummy ache, or you know,
similar to paediatric medicine, I would imagine.
Absolutely, good point. You know, so it's more worrying when you know you just got like a dog or a cat that is clearly unwell, but you don't even know why they're unwell because you can't ask them.
That's where a lot of the diagnostic tools come in,
absolutely,
don't they?
So what kind of diagnostic tools? You've got blood tests, I assume.
Absolutely,
is one of the first things.
Yeah, we've got really comprehensive blood analysers at the practice. We do a myriad of tests. So we've got
ultrasound
equipment.
Wow,
absolutely. We've got x-ray, and we've got sort of surgical theatre. So we're pretty well kit up, actually.
So a rude question. Did you have to borrow money to invest in all this huge amount of equipment? Or can you hire it? Or how does that work for expensive stuff?
No, so we have predominantly... obviously got business loans and stuff like that, so we've purchased it all and we'll be paying it back for
many
some
years.
Time at the moment, obviously, because a lot of it's quite huge investments and we need to sort of almost try before you buy with certain things, so we've had some fantastic reps that have allowed us to sort of trial certain ultrasound equipment and stuff like that before we then look at purchasing something that we get on board.
It's interesting, isn't it, because technology again medical technology comes on leaps and bounds all the time, you know,
constantly evolving,
and it constantly evolves, and you know there's new techniques and new bits of a kit that allow you to do stuff, which all costs money as well.
It must be constantly changing.
It does.
You know, there's always the new model.
You've got to stay on your toes with this sort of profession. It's not, you know, we're not back in the dark ages. Things are changing constantly.
And we spent a long time choosing all the equipment as well. You know, trialing lots of different equipment, like the blood machines, for example.
I've got a good mate who's a dentist, and he calls himself an engineer. Yeah, because he invents new techniques, and he speaks at conferences all over the world where he's invented new ways of implanting stuff, or he did a big thing on fiberglass teeth and all that kind of nonsense, you know. But not only that, he's invented tools to use to do things, because he loves doing that kind of stuff. But it just shows you how much can happen in medical intervention, you know, where people come along and go, oh, if we bolted one of those, you could stick it up there and you could do that much easier.
It's like x-rays.
If you get what I'm saying.
We used to have to put them in all the different chemicals, the x-rays, when I started, you know, the fixer, the developer, and now it's all straight onto the system and all digital, isn't
absolutely
it?
Absolutely, you know, and scanning technology has come on leaps and bounds to what it was, of course, there's a cost in terms of keeping up with all of that as well. But I know, you know, you guys are loaded, obviously. But
once you've had a diagnosis and it's a little bit out of your league, you then presumably can send it on to specialist vets. So I don't know, if you had something, a cat or dog that wasn't responding to your treatment, you would know other vets that maybe you'd ask?
So there's various scenarios. So obviously we are first opinion, but we do have very close working relationships with some European specialists, certificate holders as well, that can do a lot of either that referral work actually on site. So they'll come
they'll
to
come
us.
To you.
Yeah,
wow.
Absolutely. So what we want to do is actually have everything kind of under one roof, you know, and have that sort of ownership of that patient, see it through.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, it's not a 9-to-5. We don't, you know, I've never been of that persuasion. We don't sort of necessarily ship it off out and, you know, wash your hands of it.
Yeah, sure.
It's a case of, you know, really wanting to sort of provide the best service for those patients and those clients, so that we are, you know, seeing it through and you know, hopefully getting the answer that you know, and that we want.
But we have the visiting cardiologist, don't we? And the visiting orthopaedic surgeon at the moment as well.
You know, that sounds useful for us, really, doesn't it? you can't. There's a waiting list on the NHS.
Yeah.
I've got to ask the question, what pets do you both have?
I've got a very, very old cat. She's nearly 22.
Wow.
Yes, and some chickens and some fish. That's all we've got at the moment.
Wow.
Can't get anything else.
What kind of cat?
She's an old tortoise shell.
Lovely. Yeah, they're often very timid, aren't they, tortoise shells?
No, they're normally naughty. Naughty, she was a naughty tortoise when she was younger.
And fish, what kind of fish? Like in a bowl or in a pond?
Just in a pond in the garden for the kids.
Lovely.
And my four chickens, who I adore.
Mm-hmm. And you get eggs, but you don't eat them, or do you eat them?
I do eat them. Yeah,
good girl. Yeah. And Tim?
So I've got two dogs, Elsie and Teddy, a golden retriever, and a little Jack Russell Cross. A cat. Bengal cat called Mulan, and two feral children as well. 2 and 5.
Yeah, I've got two of those as well. Yeah.
So what do you do with your pets when you go to work?
So they're quite fortunately, the cat will do her own thing, but the dogs generally come with us. We've got, you know, it's a very sort of relaxed working environment. You know, from the ground up, we essentially wanted it to be a chilled out sort of area. You know, it's very homely. We designed it just as that, so that we knew that we were going to be spending so much time here. We wanted to enjoy it, you know. We didn't want it to feel as though we were coming in. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And I think that, you know, we want that from, you know, our staff members as well. All of our handpicked team that have started this with us, you know, all kind of, we hope, feel invested in it, and they've, you know, all got ownership of it as well. You know, because it's more than just me and Laura that have started this, and it was all about, you know, it's not all about just making money. We're very much about, you know, we want to enjoy this part of our life and actually be invested in it and have a team that's invested in it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's really what we're about. And so, yeah, it's you know, dogs come with us, and it can be rowdy. The kids have come with us. They've got a toy room upstairs as well, just so they can be preoccupied, and Netflix, and just to sort of, you know, if mum and dad are downstairs in surgery, the kids can be upstairs.
But this is coming back to what Patience was talking about, isn't it? About people organising their lifestyle to suit what they want and to suit their circumstances, You know, because most people aren't lucky enough to be able to take their kids and pets to work, but you've deliberately organised your life to be like that, which is fantastic and brilliant. And actually, I suspect, is what makes the service that you provide the level that you provide it at, because there's that degree of happiness about what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've all worked in lots of practices, and it's nice. You know, this is a happy family environment.
Yeah.
And also, it does rub off on the animals as well.
Yeah,
if they can feel that everyone's relaxed, calm, and it's not a stressful environment, it really makes a difference to the animals, definitely.
Yeah.
Do you work with any charities, any animal charities?
We do, we work with a few local charities, and, you know, obviously places like the RSPCA will invariably sort of ring and asks whether or not we'll see patients and stuff like that. So yeah, we do. We've got a few on the books already of local charities that we try and help out as well. So,
I just want to kind of ask a couple of other questions at the end. You hear stories. Oh, you know, our dogs are the same. The dogs seem to know when you're going to take them to the vet and disappear rapidly and hide places. Cats especially can get a bit vicious when you get them out of the box. Do you have any particular techniques for you're the behaviourist, Lisa? Do you have any techniques for, you know?
I think you've just got to be quicker than they are.
Calm. Cats definitely less restraint.
Right.
Cats do not like being restrained.
Yeah.
So if you need to do something with a cat, just try and just stroke them and not hold them as much. And dogs, again, calm and less restraint.
Yeah.
You know, they don't like you to go more pandied.
Yeah.
You need to just be calm and relaxed, and it works really well, doesn't it? We very rarely have problems, because if you're calm, they're calm.
I was amazed by my vet, Vicky, who you know, and when I took the new Darcy Greyhound, she never muzzles them. My previous vet would put a little rag around them, and she just says, no, I'm going to clip her claws. You feed. And she's got all these tidbits, and it's a really nice method of doing it, much sweeter.
And it makes it a nicer experience for them, and they're not going to feel scared when they come back next time. Obviously, we do have to use muzzle.
I don't get all this clipping claws stuff.
Well, you want a greyhound. Their claws grow so quickly, and they have a quick.
Long quicks.
Ridiculous.
Amanda tries to clip our dog's nails, and it is hilarious watching it, because you'd think you just stabbed the dog in the eye the way it goes and she hasn't even opened the clippers yet.
I don't like their feet being touched most of the time.
It's often easier when you take them away from the owner. Most owners are quite good with that. I mean, some obviously are always a bit worried about them taking away the pet, and although you very rarely have to, but if you've got a really anxious one or an aggressive one, sometimes they're better away from the owner.
Yeah.
What's the number one behavioural problem that you're seeing, apart from dogs with anxiety about separation anxiety?
Separation anxiety definitely way
huge
out there. For me, as a behaviourist, I see a lot of lead pulling. I see a lot of anxiety, generalised anxiety now.
On the lead?
And off the lead. Generalised anxiety that I'm finding that the sort of the cockapoos and Yorkie poos, they seem to have quite a lot of anxiety.
Because they're really popular, aren't they?
Everyone's
got a cockapoo at the moment.
Yeah,
everybody's got a lockdown puppy.
Yeah, my neighbour rescued a Turkish dog, street dog, during lockdown, because she couldn't get one locally.
What's it called? Kebab?
Yes, we call it Fatima, but it's really called Rosie. Mm-hmm. But she's a 76, this lady, and... this dog is very aggressive on the lead, and I'm very worried that she's going to get pulled over. And we now, on our dog walks, we can't stand and chat. She'll floor a dog. So I've given her some calming chews, but I don't think they've made any difference to calming pills, which I give my greyhound, and they've worked wonders on my greyhound. We stopped giving them for 3 days, and then she wouldn't go out of the house. When we first had her, she wouldn't go out of the house. If we miss those calming pills, but difficult one, that aggression on the lead.
It's quite common, because when they're on the lead, they feel
they can't run.
Obviously, they're a lot more restrained, and they can't behave naturally as they want to.
Can you give us a tip for her?
Remain calm, and don't, as soon as you see another dog, don't tense the lead up, because that's what we all do naturally. You'll tense the lead up and go, it's another dog, they're going to start, and then that feeds down the lead.
She's now just doing a wide berth, so her walks are not communal or...
No, but it's making it worse, because the dog's not becoming exposed to other dogs in a positive way. You've just got to make it really positive.
I should get her to give you a ring.
Yes, avoidance is not the answer.
Cool.
She fell in her own fish pond because of it at one stage, and she's 17.
Dog reactivity is a big thing that I see as well.
Just going back to the other advice about cats, I would say that if you've got a planned trip to the vets, then get out the cat carrier well in advance. Don't just because of course they're going to see it and go, oh my god. Okay, just get it out well in advance, put it away somewhere that's visible but not in the way, under the table or something like that,
because otherwise they go off bat catching.
I haven't had cats for years, but when I did have cats, we used to have those blue boxes,
cat carrier.
Cat carriers. As soon as you got it out, the cats would get on a plane and fly to Australia or something, and you couldn't find. I lived in a big house in the country, and you wouldn't see the cats for a week.
It's a common phone call, isn't it? I'm really sorry, I've got an appointment at this time, but the cats disappeared.
My greyhound caught a rat the other day, and the new husband, the rat was still alive, just shook it as they do and broke its neck, and so the new husband had to drown it, and honestly my new husband was very traumatized by it, because he was doing rat impressions of it dying bubbles in a bucket of water, and our mate said, you should have just bashed it on there with a spade, and I said no, but he had to drown it. What would you have done with you'd have probably euthanized it, wouldn't you?
Take it to a vet, so no euthanizing.
But that would have taken, the rat was on its last legs. You couldn't get it in a cage and drive it.
Hitting it over the head may have been quicker.
So you think drowning was awful, do you?
I wouldn't
want to be drowned.
I know, but it was almost dead, and it's just little. Yeah.
We could have hit it with a shovel.
But that would have splashed brains everywhere.
Yeah, it'd be quicker for the rat.
Yeah.
We've got a humane rat trap. We've never managed to catch one, but Darcy got one just like that.
Yeah,
it's interesting. I don't know if you see many
rats
like that, but I saw the Rat Society the other day. We were doing a very big marketing campaign about having rats as pets.
They're very good pets.
Yeah, they're very
but
clean.
These wild ones we have are not pet types, are they?
No.
You don't tame them?
Probably not.
What about hedgehogs? I used to, when the kids were at school, we used to have, I had a hedgehog sort of rescue thing.
Love hedgehogs.
So I do. And I used to take them to the schools. You know how you pick them up and they wrap round? And we went away on holiday and I had this lady coming in. She said, God, I've got to feed 8 hedgehogs, you know. But I don't see them anymore in Whitstable.
Oh, they're the best little creatures.
They are.
We had one in the other day.
Yeah, we had one in for a few days.
Yeah.
But are we losing their habitat?
Gosh.
Maybe not near where you are, but I think we're more urban in Whitstable.
Possibly, and also.
We still see them.
And the fences, though, as well. Everyone fences their gardens off, and there's not a hole, so they can't move through gardens. Mm. So they recommend putting a hedgehog hole in the garden, in the fence, so they can move through gardens.
They
cover loads of ground when they
I love them. When we first moved to where we are, upside down house, so I made my new husband, we had 2 cats at the time, made him put some cat flap things through our side alley gates, so they could... We could chuck them out the front door and then they could come through the side alley into the back. And then we had a pump room. We got an indoor pool. We had a pump room. It was nice and warm. Because they were elderly, we put a nice thing in there for them, bed. And then they would eventually shin up a thing and come on the flat roof and meow and come in the kitchen window, which is the first floor. Long story short, we had loads of mice. I had Mickey the mice man round from the council. And he said, well, you're always going to get mice, you know, you can't get rid of them. And I said, well, I'm feeding my old cats in this lovely pump room. Opened the door and there was a great big fox sitting in the cat thing that curled up. And it had mange, of course. It stunk to high heaven. So I called a fox man that lives on the Isle of Sheppey. I don't know if you still know him.
Ray, from Swampies.
He came and caught it. And took it and got it all better. And then he phoned me and he said, do you want your fox back? I said, not really. He said, but it's what he knows.
Mm. Yeah.
And I said, yeah, but we've got a dog and 2 cats. But they released him onto Tankerton Slopes.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, he's really good. Yeah,
he is fantastic.
I have a lot of wildlife in my garden. The problem I have with hedgehogs is the badgers.
Yeah.
The badgers come after the hedgehogs.
Do they?
Mm. We've got a badger set in the garden. We've got a bunch of foxes. One of the foxes has got a really damaged back leg. And our dog goes out in the garden, spots the fox and chases it. And, of course, the fox can't run very fast. So the dog slows down because he don't want to catch it. he just wants to look hard. it's comical because the fox is limping away and the dog goes slower and slower and slower.
You have a pheasant that knocks at your door as well, don't you?
Oh, the pheasant, yeah. It pecks on the back door to come in.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. I tried to get it to jump in the pot, but it wouldn't. No, the bane of my life is blooming squirrels. I've got Mexican squirrels.
Huge Mexican squirrels.
I've got huge Mexican squirrels, don't ask.
Wearing some.
He bought a special... squirrel thing, didn't you?
No, I'm a great one for birds in the garden. We've got ducks and moorhens. I've got a big lake and stuff in the garden, and we've got lots of wildlife. But I bought a couple of bird houses and bird feeders, and the blooming squirrels are a pain in the bum. Anyway, I was talking to some chaps from the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds, and again, there's an easy way to deal with squirrels. Mix all the food with very hot chili powder, right? Really? Why? They said, well, the birds have no sense of taste, so they can't taste it, but the squirrels hate it, right? So I spent ages, I mixed it all up, and I put it on there, and bloody 3 squirrels straight up there ate a lot. So they are clearly Mexican squirrels, are they not?
That's a new one on me.
Yeah. I spent a fortune on anti-squirrel feeders, and they got into every single one of them. They are just such intelligent animals. Pretty they're high, just yeah. unbelievably intelligent, and it takes them no time at all to work out how to get things. I had one thing that was spring-loaded, so that as soon as you stood on it, it shut the feeding gate. So what the squirrel did is it hung upside down, yeah, stuck its head in there, and it ate to its heart's content. You just think, wow.
Where there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Anyway, It's been fascinating talking to you. Thank you so much for joining us and telling us a little bit about the world of veterinary surgery.
Thank you for having us.
And from the point of view of what you do looking after animals, but also as a business, it's been fascinating to hear your story. Thank you so much for that. If people want to find out about it, I guess you've got a website, have you?
We will. I'm doing all the social media at the moment, amongst other things.
He's gone wild on Twitter now.
Like he has, yeah, he's famous.
And Lisa's just joined up as well. What's your Twitter handle, Lisa?
At the Canine Counsellor.
Fabulous. At the Canine Counsellor. We will follow you after.
At Counsellor Canine.
Yeah.
I've done Twitter before.
So no website yet.
Yet it is in.
So a phone number would we have?
We do have a phone number. It's 01795 500 707. If you want to ring and register your pet or pets, that's absolutely fine. We are on Facebook. We are on Instagram as well, so that's been predominantly our main sort of source of social media.
Lots of nice pictures.
And we will be on the internet in due course. In terms of our website, we'll be
bobbinghillvets.co.uk.
Absolutely, yes.
bobbinghillvets.co.uk.
I have put a link to the Facebook page on the radio site. Once your website is up, I'll put that up as well. Fantastic. Because these interviews stay there forever, so people will always be able to find this, and you can always point them back to it.
And if people ever want to sort of come and pop by and just sort of see us, chat to us, then absolutely please do feel free, just give us a ring and we'll find a convenient time.
If ever you'd like Lisa to borrow a greyhound, she's lovely, and talk to her about her separation anxiety, because of course she's grown up in kennels. I said to my new husband we should have another dog, really, because they're used to snuggling up with another one. But it's the cost, really, that puts us off.
We've reached the end of another show.
Where does it go?
Thank you to Tim and Lisa for joining us. Thank you to Patience Okambono,
thank you,
the transformation coach. What do you call yourself? You're introverted.
Visionary introverted woman.
The visionary introverted woman. I don't believe you're introverted at all. Thank you so much, all of you. Thank you to my stonkingly gorgeous co-host.
You nearly forgot what my name was then.
Lippy.
I know, my little cold sore.
Oh, no, it's not good.
I have had one for years, until I had the AstraZeneca. Then
it's herpes, I told you, it's herpes, isn't it?
Yeah, and then I had the COVID, and it seems to have brought out...
It's herpes, it's a herpes virus. Cold sores are herpes.
But I do take L-lysine. Do you give dogs cats L-lysine?
Yes.
Do dogs get herpes?
Yeah, absolutely.
I take L-lysine every day and it hasn't worked.
Anyway, thank you for all of that. Your
medical advice.
We've given up with doctors. We're getting her a vet now. do you ever, just very quickly, because it was a question I meant to ask you.
About your anal glands?
No. As a vet, do you ever get emergency situations where they go, you're a vet, can you deal with this, because you must know something about medicines and it's a human?
Vets are generally better. They get more training.
I did see someone get run over once, a little boy, he was fine. And they went, it's all right, she's a nurse. And I went, no, veterinary nurse.
Bless him, did you say, give me your paw?
I was like, no, veterinary nurse, because it was a bit of responsibility, just be run over.
Laura's had a situation.
Oh, Laura did, yeah.
Yeah, where she had to do CPR, managed to bring the gentleman back.
Yeah, she did.
Generally when you're on an aeroplane, you end up sort of reluctantly putting your hand up when they ask if there's anybody medically trained. But
cool.
Nothing more sinister than that.
No.
Yeah, cool. Thank you all very much. We've reached the end of another show. We'll be back with a show next week. Stay safe, everyone.
Bye-bye. Bye for now.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
This is Channel 2.